It's time for this week's Nebraska Wheat Report, brought to you by the Nebraska Wheat Board. Dave Green is with the Wheat Quality Council, and he recently joined us to talk about the history of the organization, which dates back to World War II.
Millers were exempt from service because it was such an important job trying to keep Europe and Asia supplied with flour. So all of a sudden the World War II ends. Everybody starts to rebuild, and it really doesn't take too long before you can rebuild your farms and your railroads and your grain storage and your flour mills. And so what the U.S. found was that their demand for wheat flour dropped by half in about 2 years. And so if you remember your economics, if you're a buyer and a seller, and during World War II, the sellers had all the leverage. The flour mills had all the leverage. If somebody complained about the flour went to somebody who didn't complain. But now all of a sudden with the loss in demand, the bakers ended up with an advantage because of the overcapacity, and the bakers were the ones that actually demanded that the millers do something about the poor quality of the wheat crops. And so that's when this all started, was this relationship between the millers and the bakers and the plant breeders. And whereas there's this common goal of trying to make sure that the quality of the wheat that's grown is acceptable to the trade. So that's the history of where we come from. So what we do is for the commodity class wheats, and I say commodity class with the idea that there are, of course, flour mills working with plant breeders directly for unusual traits, or the color, they want a specific color, or they want a specific wheat that's got higher fiber, or doesn't has a lower falling number, or alpha amylase levels. And so there are identity preserved systems around the country that the millers are involved with. But our goal is the commodity class, the average of the crop that's being grown and freely traded across the Great Plains. So we manage programs in the eastern soft area, primarily in Ohio is where that program's run. We run a program in the winter wheat area. We run a program in Montana separately, and then we run a spring wheat program in the Dakotas and Minnesota. And basically, we've got 15 or 20 growing locations. We plant the newest wheat varieties next to wheat varieties that are known for their quality, or that we know what to expect with them for quality. And then we put them under code. Send them to our cooperators. Everybody gets a chance to bake these flours, and then see what we like and don't like. And last week, we just finished up our annual meeting where we go over that data for the what we found, who entered what varieties, what the industry thought of them, what the plant breeder had to say was going to happen to them. So it's this behind the scenes kind of, we're a pretty obscure group. I think we had 150 at our annual meeting, so it's not a huge group that's responsible. But it involves the grower groups like the Nebraska Wheat Board and the Kansas Wheat Commission. It involves the plant breeders, both the public university breeders and the private breeders. And it involves the millers and the bakers doing a lot of testing of these varieties.
Huh. Fascinating. Okay. So,
We're the only ones. I have found out that we're the only kind of group like this in the world that involves industry in the development of the wheat varieties. So it's it is a very unique program, and we're real proud of it.
Well, Dave, talk to me a little bit. You kind of briefly mentioned these meetings that you just wrapped up. What specifically were some of those conversations and things you guys talked about? Dive more into that.
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting exercise because the weather has such a big part of what we end up having for quality. As you know, if the weather's too hot and dry, the yields are down, the wheat kernels are thinner, and it throws off wheat quality with these environmental effects. So what we see every year is that the ones with inherently good quality tend to stand out or be a little better than the other wheat varieties, no matter what conditions they're grown in. So sometimes all the wheat looks pretty good, and some are just slightly better. Some years, all of them look bad, except for a handful that have fought through it and look better. So I don't remember the details of each one this year, but I know that the wheat breeders from the universities and from these private companies kind of value this data. It's data that they can't get anywhere else, and they're very attentive to the needs. You know, again, these are elite lines that are probably 10 to 12 years in the making. So these plant breeders are sorting these out, eliminating the bad ones, encouraging the good ones to move on. And by the time they get to us, they're ready to release. So they're ready to go to the farmers, and usually they do go to the farmers. A handful will be not released because of something we said or some other character flaw that had just been uncovered. But these plant breeders have a lot of money invested in these lines by the time we see them. And so they're very attentive to what we think of their varieties.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So Dave, you're talking, and I'm now thinking about the wheat producer in Nebraska or Kansas or wherever it's at. What do they take home from those conversations and the work you guys do? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, particularly with the context of every individual farmer knows he needs to plant the highest yielding varieties on his farm that he can grow and get a hold of, because he's going to get paid on yield. There's no question about that. I don't know that that's going to change in my lifetime, but there's not a lot of, some years there's a protein premium if something odd happens, but for the most part, the Nebraska farmer, for example, is going to get paid on bushels delivered to the elevator. So it's critical to him that he buys the varieties that have the best disease packages, the best that handle their soil conditions better, so that he can get the highest yield possible. However, there is an end use for the wheat that isn't the feedlot. So unlike the other feed grains like corn and sorghum and such, there is a quality that's part of the equation, and it's the part that the millers are focused on. You know, how is this going to bake? Are customers going to be happy? So all that leads to, you know, we don't necessarily want farmers to grow varieties that don't yield well just because they're better quality. But we do want everybody to realize there is a quality component to wheat that needs to be addressed, and it's being addressed through these wheat quality council, with the idea of taking a look at what's going on, providing feedback to them, with the idea, our hope is that quality is a consideration when they're breeding their wheat, that they'll continue to breed wheats that are going to meet the needs of the industry and our export markets. And so, you know, it is a split goal. We don't line up with the goals of each individual farmer, but we want Nebraska to be known for good quality wheats. And so we work with their plant breeders to make sure it's a part of what they're doing.
Yeah, a dynamic relationship, it sounds like. Dave, what else is important to mention that we missed? Anything?
You know, we work very closely with the Nebraska group, from Royce and his group at Nebraska Wheat, and Catherine Frells, who's the breeder at Nebraska that comes to our meetings and supplies us with samples, and then Lan Xu is their chemist there, who is one of our cooperators. And so Nebraska is a big partner of the Wheat Quality Council, and we certainly appreciate that.
Excellent. That'll do it for this week's Nebraska Wheat Reports. Again, we've been visiting with Dave Green of the Wheat Quality Council. I'm Alex Makovic, reporting for the Rural Radio Network.